This is Carrie from Wrap Your Head Around Silks. This is the Expecting Aerialist podcast, now with the Digitent Network. How's it going, guys? Thank you so much for joining me today. Before we get started, lots of stuff happening at Wrap Your Head Around Silks. Keep an eye out if you're already receiving my emails for some holiday specials. And if you're not, just go into the show notes, grab my blog. I've got a bunch of free gifts. I also have Roll It Out 60-minute virtual live body rolling classes. We have foam rollers, balls. We do it together. We hit the floor together. And I get to work with you guys face-to-face. So it's great. All right, my friends. Today we have Noah Dock. He is a choreographer, an aerialist, and a friend of mine, and he is currently beta testing a new app called Red Flags. It is a dating app that he has conceptualized and started building over this year, and it is gonna be out, and you guys can be on it and date. And he explains everything about how this concept is different than other apps that are out there. It's a great idea. I am very, very glad I'm not in the dating arena anymore. But I know a lot of you guys find yourselves there for one reason or another. Maybe you've been dating. Maybe you haven't in 10 years and now you have to. The world has changed and he's trying to make it a little less painful. So I can't wait for you guys to hear this. Let's get started. Noah is such an interesting creature in my life because he jokes and says he's a retired aerialist. Retired.
I am. I'm the retired aerialist.
Retired aerialist. He's not that old. He just kind of has gone through the paces. And he's recently showed up at my class almost like to see if he can do shit. I feel like that's like the motivation.
It is.
But he's a very good student as a student slash teacher because he does say, hey, I'm going to do this thing, so don't have a heart attack. He warns me.
That is true. I do like to warn because I feel like I liked that when I was a teacher.
Yeah, like let me know.
To be like, I'm going to go do this.
I'm going to do the open version. Just letting you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he started coming to class, and we started, like, get to know each other, and I think we clicked right away because we both don't take ourselves too seriously.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
At all.
And I was like, what are you doing? And he's like, well, I made an app. I made a dating app. I was like, oh, my God, that is perfect. It's perfect because we don't actually talk about that a lot on this podcast. We talk about kind of like the step after dating, having kids and being parents and stuff. But like,
right.
I think people find themselves in that dating space for lots of reasons. Like, I had to date after I got divorced. And let me tell you, when you get divorced and you have to go back on the dating scene, that's way worse than you did the first time around because you thought you're done.
Right. You checked out. You checked out before, and now that you have to go back, you got to relearn it. And with the way that all these dating apps are and the way the dating is today, you have to relearn it to an extreme degree because now you're on a new app. You're in a new world. You're post-COVID now. And so it's all a new game to learn.
Yeah, and I feel like even if you took a year off, it would be different.
Yeah.
It changes that quickly. So, Noah, if you'll introduce yourself, a little bit about your career, and then what motivated you for this new project.
Yeah. So, I am my background is ridiculous and drastic. That's why I say I'm a retired aerialist because I feel like it's been a lot longer than it has. But I just shoved a lot of years into.
Can you give us like a flyby on that career?
Yeah. So I was raised in Los Angeles, California. I became a dancer when I was in high school, and I started dancing professionally pretty much immediately. I was on a, high school dance team, but I also joined a Israeli contemporary dance company. I started doing commercial work, and I sort of hit the ground running with dance, and then wanted to go to school for dance. So I ended up at Muhlenberg College in Allentown, Pennsylvania, where I majored in dance and business. And it was there that I started to do aerial acrobatics and was engaged with the circus world. I started doing aerial with Ray Pierce at Hollywood Aerial Arts way, way, way back when. And took that skill set to my college where there was an aerial class and turned it into a circus program. So we started a performance production program where we would put on full shows every single year and started to create coursework. So I worked with the head of the dance department to write a circus history course to develop the aerial courses further. And once I graduated, the performance program that I had started remained as a student function, and they brought me on as a faculty of the college. And I was an adjunct professor there for 2 years, where I developed curriculum, and we wrote aerial compositions, circus composition classes, higher level mixed apparatus classes, aerial silks, all sorts of different classes. And I was running this, you know, sort of program and this course development. From there, we took the program and the sort of creative juices of this company that we'd created and turned it into a company in New York City called the Atlas Circus Company. And we produced 3 shows a year for 5 years, creating narrative circus work where we had residencies in New York, in Connecticut, Pennsylvania, and we'd put on summer shows at the college that I worked at and performed at places like The Pit, Dixon Place, all sorts of different places. And while I was in New York, aside from running my circus company with my partners, I was also working in marketing and in production with different companies like Blue Man Group, Big Apple Circus, Nimbus Dance Works, a ton of other people. And while I was enjoying the entertainment world and the production world and running my company, I fell in love with education and wanted to continue teaching. And the only way to do that was to go get my master's. And because I envisioned being able to go, you know, start my own program one day, et cetera. And so in 2019, I left New York, moved back to California, where I got my master's in dance choreography from California Institute of the Arts. And then there was a little blip in the global history of 2020, and there was a pandemic. And getting your master's in choreography was not the most ideal situation. And I decided to move up to Mammoth Lakes in 2020 to get out of Los Angeles hustle bustle craziness of pandemic, because the options were, you know, live in a one bedroom apartment on Wilshire Boulevard or come to the mountains and be able to go hiking and skiing and be outside despite the fact that there was a pandemic. And so I did that. And while I was here...
Did you finish your degree before the pandemic started?
No, I finished my degree while the pandemic was happening. So I graduated with my master's in 2021.
Did that work out in a way okay because you were in school?
It did work out okay. I didn't have the greatest experience with CalArts, and that was even before the pandemic started. But once the pandemic began, it was sort of, okay, I can finish my degree. I can be in the mountains and I can sort of do it my way. And so it worked out in that way. So I do have I did graduate and did complete my degree. And spent time in the mountains, worked on ski patrol in the mountains and was search and rescue and did all sorts of different things up here. Was an alpine guide and loved it. And then in 2022, I decided that the mountain man version of myself had had his fun and I needed to get back to sort of the arts and just different kinds of work. And I moved back to Los Angeles and started performing again, worked with Cirque Berserk in downtown LA, doing immersive character work and performance work. And that was a great time. And now I work, the way I pay for a roof over my head is I do social media management and marketing and photography and all sorts of things. But the big project is dating and creating this dating app, which started about a year ago. We started designing the app in February of 2023. We're now in the development of that app. We're going to launch in January of 2024. Our beta is now out. So all of your users who are needing a dating app can get on our beta and try out the app. And it's called Red Flags. And it's designed to help people to actually go on real dates, to get them out there into the world, to get them off of the dating apps and to have real life relationships. Because these dating apps that exist now are capitalizing on people's failure. They are data harvesting, data collecting. They want to keep you on the app as long as they possibly can. And they and they want to keep you on the apps. And they don't want you to actually find a date. They don't want to actually help you find somebody. And that's our goal. We want you to get on a date and get off the app. That is our dream. And in fun and humorous ways, because it's called Red Flags. I mean, it has to be funny.
Okay, I want you to explain the concept of it, but she wants another popsicle, and let me do that for her so she'll let us.
Can I have a popsicle too?
Noah wants a popsicle. Will you share one?
Yeah, will you share one with me?
No.
Here, come into the microphone and tell him why you won't share with him.
I'm sharing. You're not here.
You're not here, she said. Too smart.
Damn. Next time.
You know, her belly has been like a mess recently, but one of the two things that is fun that the doctor says you can have is popsicles and Jell-O.
Ooh, those are good things. Popsicles and Jell-O.
Like, I don't make it myself, so it's kind of like, it's still processed, but whatever.
But it's easy. It's easy, it tastes good.
Yeah.
You don't have to think about it too much.
Yeah. Okay, so talk about the concept of the app.
Well, a little bit of background. The idea for the app came about a year and a half ago. I was driving up to Mammoth, actually, and I was on the phone with a friend of mine, and we were talking about how much we hated dating and how much we hated dating apps, because everybody hates their dating app. And we were joking about...
Were you dating at the time?
I was dating, yes.
Okay.
My last relationship ended about 2.5 years ago. And when that relationship ended, I went on every single dating app. I went on hundreds of dates. I went full out. I went all out into the dating app world and went on as many dates as I possibly could. And I had a great time. Don't get me wrong. I had a great time. But at a certain point, my friend and I were sitting around. We were talking. We were like, this is relentless. Like, none of these dates go anywhere. These conversations are so monotonous, and it's just, there's all this ghosting, and you have hundreds of conversations that go nowhere. It's exhausting, and people aren't real. People aren't upfront with you. And so we thought about, wouldn't it be funny if there was a dating app that just had all of the horrible things about you on your profile? Like, rather than like filtered photos of you like looking fantastic and, you know, great, you know, prompts about like things that you love, like, I'm a great chef and an excellent hiker, and I, you know, all the like all these things that like just paint you in this wonderful way, because that's what your profile is. Your profile is designed to like be the best version of yourself. What if it was just the worst version of yourself? It was like photos of you like, you know, eating ramen or like covered in barbecue sauce, eating chicken wings or something like that. Like, all of the photos that your mom accidentally snaps of you that are just terrible and you're just making a goofy face? Like, what if it's just, it was just awful? And what if your red flags were on your profile? Like, what if you had all the bad things about you? Like, oh, I'm afraid of commitment, or I'm a total slob, or whatever it might be that's on your profile. And we laughed about it and we thought, ah, that would, you know, nobody would ever do that. That would never work. And I started to think about it more and more over like about a year's worth of time. And I told a couple people about some ideas I was having. And of course, you know, everyone's parents are their biggest fan. And so I stupidly told my mother about it. And my mom, who knows nothing about dating apps, she's been married for, you know, 30 years. She loved it. She was like, you have to do this. You have to go do this. I said, yeah, I'll keep that in mind. It'll never happen. It's too expensive, et cetera. And then around January of 2023, my mom sat me down and she was like, what's your problem? Like, what are you doing? Why aren't you doing this dating app? You should do it. It's a great idea. I said, okay, fine. I'll give it a shot. And now we're here. And basically the concept of the app is there's three pieces that make it different than other dating apps. The first is red flags. So every user will sign up and they'll get to take like a fun BuzzFeed quiz and they'll find out what their red flags are. And they'll also find out what their green flags are. We know that you all have redeeming qualities as well. And so you get to find out your red flags and your green flags. And everyone gets to put three red flags and three green flags on their profile. So right from the start, we get to be upfront. We get to be honest about ourselves. We get to be a little bit more self-aware. And we get to be funny, because our key and our goal with the red flags is not only to be funny, but to open it up to vulnerability. Vulnerability is the key to deeper, more meaningful relationships. And we don't have that in current dating apps. You go on these dates and it's like a job interview. It's, you know, what's your favorite pasta? Oh, the weather looks like this. Your mother's maiden name is so interesting. It's like, there's nothing deeper to connect about. But when you have something like a red flag, if my red flag is I'm a serial monogamist, suddenly that opens up the floodgates for you to ask me questions about that. And now I have to share something about my personal life. I have to share something about me, something deeper about me. And now you know me on a deeper level. We have a more meaningful connection and we have more to talk about. We have more to discuss. We have more to understand about one another rather than just information like what my job is, what I like, etc. So that's part one, is key to deeper relationships is vulnerability. And we're using red flags to be funny and vulnerable in that way. The second piece is we have a time element. So these dating apps, you can open, you know, someone's dating app who's had it for a year and they'll have hundreds of matches and hundreds of messages that they could send to someone. And I think that's a problem. I think the fact that I could message somebody that I matched with 2.5 years ago, a message to say, hey, do you want to go grab a cup of coffee? I feel like I should have missed my chance. I feel like I shouldn't be able to contact that person.
Yeah.
And so we have a time element to our app, which is that when two people match, they have 24 hours to get the other person's phone number, set up a time and place to meet, whatever it is. You have 24 hours to get off the app before we unmatch you. So after 24 hours, you won't be able to connect with people through our app. And so the goal is we want you to get their phone number. We want you to set up a time and place to meet. We want you to get off the app so that you can have a real life relationship instead of just communicating through our app and having these hundreds and hundreds of conversations that never went anywhere. And our sort of logic behind it is shit or get off the pot, for lack of a better term. You know, we want you to go do it. We want you to go meet this person. We want you to make this happen. And if you're having a conversation like, hey, how are you? And then 2 days later, they respond with, good, how are you? 3 days later.
Right.
Pretty, you know, what are you doing this weekend? A week later, oh, I got dinner with the girls. It's like, why did we just spend 2 weeks having a conversation that would have taken 10 seconds? Like, let's get on with it. If we're actually wanting to meet somebody, let's get on with it. Let's do it. Let's find out if we have something to connect about and if we really want to do it. And the last piece is that everybody pays for it. So a big problem in dating apps currently is only about 10% of users are paying for the service. And they're paying for what's called premium features. They're paying for social status. They're paying for the ability to like more people in a given time frame. They're paying for the ability to message different people. They're paying for super likes. They're paying for all of these upgrades to their social status. And that is not how you find a date. That's how you get more numbers, but it doesn't actually help you to find a date. And so you have 90% of users who are playing the game for free. It doesn't matter if they match with somebody. It doesn't matter if they actually go on the date with you. It doesn't matter if they fulfill the plan of going on the date, because they can keep going and it's free. It doesn't matter. So for us, everybody pays for it and everybody pays less than all of these other dating apps. So there's no premium features. There's no elevated status. There's nothing like that. Everyone just pays for access. And our logic behind it is we want dating to feel like going to the bar. You show up to the bar and you pay the bouncer to get into the bar. Now you're in the bar. It doesn't matter what your apartment looks like. It doesn't matter what car you drove here in. You're in the bar. But the bar closes. So you better talk to the person that you want to talk to before the bar closes, or else they might not be here tomorrow night.
Ugh. It's almost like you've done that before, Noah.
It's almost like I've done that before.
You know, tell me if these are the things that you're thinking about. So I do feel like, so when I was divorced and there was a couple years in there, I was definitely dating like it was a job, because I was like, yeah, these eggs are shriveling, blah, blah, blah. Really wanted to start a family. And the whole thing about like just waiting in somebody's inbox forever, there's an element that like everyone's waiting for a better option.
Right. Yeah. There's, oh, her nose is a little crooked to the right. Oh, yeah. He used an ellipsis instead of an exclamation point. It's like, what are we doing? Why are we nitpicking these things? You've never met this person. How do you know anything?
Yeah. Or people are so like PTSD from bad experiences in the past that they go through with a fine tooth comb and never really learn about a person. And also the whole money thing, it does make a huge difference if you have skin in the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
No matter what game, I think.
Invested into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No matter what game, if you're invested into it, you want a result out of it. Our thing is, so most dating apps are costing $15 to $1,000 a month. It's insane how expensive these things are.
Wait, what? Doing. What apps is that much? Is it like the version of, you know, back in the day they had this thing where they introduced rich men to like hot women?
Yes.
It's only lunch. It's only something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So there's an app called The League, which is about like $400 a month or $300 a month is like the base price. And then you can get your premium features, which go up to, I believe, $1,000 is the max version.
And those are more like people who are consultants that matchmake.
No, these are the same kinds of dating apps. These are just
really
it's based on how much you can like somebody. It's based on how many people you are going to get shared per week. Like my friend who I think is on that app, she was looking at it and was like an extra, I think, $100 a month, and they'll share her like two more profiles a day or something like that. And so that's what she's paying for. She's paying for two more profiles to be shared with her a day for $300 a month.
And for that particular person, does she actually go on the dates? Like, does she?
So she does go on the dates.
Okay.
But the amount of them that actually have, like, just because we're going to send you two more people a day doesn't mean that those people are going to go on a date with you. It doesn't mean they're even going to respond to your messages. We know nothing. We just know that they have an account that signed up with us, and we're going to send them to you. And that's not how dating works.
Okay, when you said that, I assumed that there was, like, a matchmaker involved who, like, gets to know you and then gets to know other people. No.
No. That's a whole other thing. Like, if you've watched, like, Indian Matchmaker or Jewish Matchmaking on Netflix, like, that's a whole other world. Those are, you know, you're hiring a professional. It's like getting a therapist, but to find you a spouse.
Right.
That's a whole other thing.
Okay, so the other thing I wanted to ask about, you're obviously an educated person, but we are in the arts. What is it, my love? I'm almost done.
This got wet.
What got wet? It's okay. Is it your popsicle?
Yeah.
Okay, as long as you're not throwing up. that's our standard. As long as you're not throwing up.
If I had a nickel.
So, you and I talked about professional pivots because I am doing that now, and so are you. And I think this is not talked about in our artistic sphere enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even my friends who are still performing, and I'm so happy for them that they're wanting to do that and they're having success doing it. Okay, thank you. Like, just as like with every gymnast, ice skater, football player, you get to a point and you're like, what the fuck am I supposed to do for money?
Right. Yeah.
So let's talk about your professional pivot, your feelings about it, all the things.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of us who are involved in the arts in a style or in a discipline that requires our body and requires our body to have a certain ability, we all, even as kids, if you're involved in that world, you have that moment of, okay, I can only do this for so long. And I think a lot of people immediately think, when I can't be a performer anymore, I'll be a teacher, or I will do something like that in order to continue to move my body and in order to continue that skill set. But I feel like teacher is usually the answer, right? If I'm a dancer, once I'm no longer performing, I'll become a teacher. If I'm a performer, I'll become a teacher. And I think that nowadays that needs to be broadened a lot further, because I think there's a lot more opportunity and a lot more places that people can go. You have so much admin work in the arts. You have so much marketing in the arts. You have so many different places that people can go to be involved in the arts. And I think that it's funny. I don't think I necessarily pivoted. I always did everything. And that's sort of part of what I did was I was a performer, I was a choreographer, but at the same time, I was running my own business, which meant I had to do all the marketing. I had to do social media creation. I had to learn finance. I had to do all of these things. So I was accumulating all of these skill sets. And so when I wanted to pivot or when I wanted to do something else, I had that opportunity. I think that people have different reasons for pivoting. I think most of the time it is my body is sort of done with this part of my life. What else do I want to do? And I think that's one version. I did not have that. I always joke that my body was never supposed to be a dancer. I was never meant to be a performer. I'm broken in every which way. I've dislocated my shoulders, you know, 10 times each. I have a bad knee. I have broke my tailbone. Like, none of it works. And I've done the best that I can with what
I got. By the
way,
he's gorgeous in the air. So at least you got that. But it doesn't feel great all the time is what you're saying.
it never feels great. But it's fun and I love it. And it's kept me strong. It's kept me active. It's kept my brain working. It's kept so much together. For me, I never had the, I'm no longer able to perform, I'm going to do something else pivot. I saw, like I said, I went and got my master's in 2019. The pandemic hit, and I saw the arts world going in a direction that I was not interested in being involved in. I have forever maintained that the arts can be and should be profitable, that artists, performers should not accept this low level of wages that they have received, and that we in America are suffering because of it. Because in other countries, they have much more funding for the arts. They have much more opportunity for artists to live off of the arts and what they do. And in America, we have not fought for the ability to be artists. We have not fought for financials to be artists. We've accepted the fact that if you want to be an artist, you have to do something else too. And I think that that's a detriment. And that's one of the reasons why I have struggled with the arts and wanted to be involved in other things. Where is the money coming from? Where is the bank? Where is the financial gain? And how do we help artists to be able to take hold of that and to speak for themselves and vouch for themselves and to make money off of what they do? My pivot was more based on where I saw the arts going socially, politically, financially, things like that. And I hope that one day I get to go back and help that and to improve that world for artists, for creatives, for people who, like me, wanted to start companies and be educators and everything like that, but also, you know, have families, be able to buy a house, be able to live a life that, you know, wasn't based on having a paycheck from a bar or whatever it might be.
I do hear a lot of my choreographer friends who are European, and they're like, what is this bullshit? Because in Europe, they get paid for being an artist because it's valuable there.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Not to say it's just like suddenly easier in the arts in Europe. Like, I have plenty of friends who are choreographers and directors in Europe who are constantly fighting for funding. But funding does exist. And I forget whose quote it is, but one of the circus people that I spoke with at Montreal Compliment Cirque years ago, her quote was, "My biggest regret about my career in the arts is that I had to leave America to do it."
Wow.
And I think that's such a bummer. And yeah. I think that is something that if we can help it, we should. And it's, I know your question was about pivoting and we got you know, funding for the arts, but I do think that there is immense opportunity for the arts to be a very profitable career path in America. We just need to have that value for not only ourselves, but for the arts itself. You know, music is an art form, and I can tell you that successful artists, you know, are doing pretty good for themselves. The movies, film industry, yeah. It's an art form. Broadway, it's theater, it's art. Like, Cirque du Soleil is a massively successful artistic company, and they have success in America. Las Vegas has tons of their shows. Like, it is possible.
Yes.
People have success in the arts, but the majority do not. And
correct.
I think we can. I think we should. And yeah.
Well, even if it wasn't a strict pivot, just the idea of like doing something else big and successful and you're not performing. I think that's kind of what that means in my mind all the people out there who are coming of that time in that life. And it's really not age, because I feel like some people have to make that pivot really early, and some people, yeah. or make that shift, I should say.
People do it at different times. And I think, I also don't think that just because you pivot one direction doesn't mean you can't go back. Like I call myself the retired aerialist, right? And so I do know that I can go back and I can do aerial again, and I can go back and I do. I teach, I choreograph, I'm constantly being creative and thinking about these things. I personally see the work that I'm doing with this dating app as an opportunity to help the arts in the future as an artist with potentially more financial opportunity, because I see the arts and who funds the arts. People who fund the arts today are, you know, people who enjoy the arts. They're people who like it. You know, they were very successful with their car dealership or with their department store or with their tech company, whatever it is. And they like the arts. And so they donate to the arts, and that's how it works. But wouldn't it be great if the people who were giving to the arts were also the artists, were also educated in the value of it, were also educated in what it could do and what they need? Because I've made the argument that 99% of the time, what the arts needs is not money, but simply what money will buy you. It's the space, it's the time, it's the set, it's the whatever it is. And that is typically what the problem is. It's not, oh, we need more money. It's, no, wouldn't it be great if you just had a rehearsal space and a theater that you had access to? Wouldn't that like cut almost all of your problems by, you know, 80%? And the answer is typically yes. And so if we could provide that for artists, I think that would be amazing. And for me, I see my work that I do now is, okay, I was an educator. I had a performance company. I worked in entertainment. Now I'm doing something else. In the future, my goal is I would love to have an artist compound to hold residencies, to hold productions, to be able to support the arts. I know I could get there through this method. I know I could get there through another method. But one pivot doesn't mean you're leaving it forever. It doesn't mean that you have to do something completely different. It just means that right now you're focused on something else and you can come back. It doesn't matter what age you are to do that. I have friends who are in their 60s who have run, you know, programs, who've been directors of dance studios, who they love their job. They love what they've done. And every couple of years they think, what if I did something else? What if I did a research project in, you know, this? What if I went to France and studied performance for a year? What if I, you know, ran a school somewhere? Whatever it is, it's a pivot. And it's the world is the oyster, right? It's, they can do whatever they want to do, and they can come back to it. They can keep doing it, whatever it is.
Noah, what was that learning curve like for an app? I mean, I'm not techie. I'm way more techie now. Like I own my own online business, and, you know, just learning how to put together a landing page and build my own website and update the website. Like, I feel like my brain almost broke over the last 5 years doing that. Yeah. What was it like for building something like a dating app or an app in general?
It's very hard. I'm still learning. I still feel like I know nothing. And I'm very fortunate. I'm working with an app development team in Orange County. So they are like, they're my coders. They're producing the app. They're building it so that I didn't, you know, spend the next 10 years trying to learn how to code and how to build an app like that. I'm working with a team to be able to do it. It is interesting. There are things that I don't understand. There are things that I do understand. There's so much back and forth with what we as users see and what is actually going on in the back end, which is fascinating to learn about. You know, just because it's really easy to do on for the user doesn't make it really easy on the back end. And that's been really interesting. I am fortunate in that I have worked in so many different fields that I feel like I can at least grasp it. When I first had my meeting with the development company that I'm working with, I talked to them and I said, listen, I work in entertainment. I have a master's in dance choreography. I know nothing about building an app. I'm just a guy with an idea, and I think it's a pretty damn good idea. And they said, you're exactly the kind of person we work with. You're a guy with an idea. You have a direction that you want to go in. You have experience in marketing, in production, and all these other things. We're here to help you to fill in the spaces of information that you don't know. And so it is a learning curve. It is challenging. I think surrounding yourself with people who are talented, who have experience in the things that you do not. I don't know how to code. I need to find people who know how to code. I know how to build a website, but I didn't know how to build exactly the kind of website that I wanted to build. So I found someone who I could work with in order to do that. I do know social media. And so I run my own social media. And so there's always learning curves, but if you're going to be an entrepreneur, if you are going to have your own business, you know, if you want something done right, do it yourself. Nobody else is going to do it for you. And being the control freak artist that I am, I want to know, I want to learn. I want to know how it works and how it's happening. And so I spend a lot of time to learn those things. And every day I learn something new. And I don't see that changing anytime soon.
If you have any advice for performers out there who do want to step out and do their own thing, and it's a very broad question, but.
I would say, you know, for without too much cliche, do it. But that figure out what it is that you really want. I think the conversation that I have with a lot of artists and a lot of colleagues is, what do you actually want out of what you're doing? And I think that has come from people who are trying to figure out if they want to teach, if they want to perform, if they want to direct, if they want to work in admin. It has applied to all of that. It has also applied to where people want to live. I've had friends who say, you know, I live in New York and I'm not sure that I'm enjoying the scene here. What do you think about me going to LA? What do you think about me going to London or Paris? And I always just ask the question, like, what's the goal? What do you want out of it? If you want to, you know, be in a place that has more opportunity for you to take class, okay, then find that place. If you want a place where you have the ability to produce a show or choreograph a piece or put something together and you'll spend as little money as humanly possible, you know, maybe there's somewhere else for you. Where's your community? Where are there people who are able and willing to work with you? And where do you have that opportunity? I think anybody who wants to do anything in the arts or outside of the arts, you're never going to know until you try, until you give it a shot. You might hate it. One of my pivots that had nothing to do with the arts is I lived in Mammoth for 2 years. I worked in the outdoor industry. I skied every single day. And I moved back to LA because I knew that I needed more. I knew that the mountain man life that I had was not going to cut it, and I needed to pursue more. And so I made a deal with myself that when I moved down to LA, the only reason or way I could do it is if I had a full-time 9-to-5 job and I was going to make, you know, $75,000 a year in this job, and that's the only way I was going to move down to LA. And I got it. I got the job. I was going to be the marketing director of a company doing legal work for lawyers and law firms. I knew I could do it. I was in that job for 3 months. I fixed their entire social media marketing structure. I was basically a glorified consultant because I just went in and fixed everything. But I was miserable. I was in that 9-to-5 job and I was like, I cannot do this. This is so not for me.
Is that the first time you had done a 9-to-5 in a long time?
It was the first time in a long time that I'd done
it. Okay. Yeah.
It wasn't my first time ever, but it was the first time in a long time and it was miserable. And the irony that I had, because I had been offered a job. Oh, look at my hair. I had been offered a job as the food and beverage manager of a property up here in Manor. And it was a great paying job. And it was probably going to be a lot of fun. And I turned it down because I had worked in the restaurant industry for quite some time. And I said to myself, I don't want to be a bartender anymore. I don't want to work in the restaurant industry. I want to move to LA so that I can have a career, so that I can build on something and so that it can go somewhere. And after 3 months of having that 9-to-5 job, of making that huge pivot, I left that job and I thought, you know, I wouldn't mind being a bartender. Like I wouldn't mind it because I have other projects. I have other things that I'm doing that are not my 9-to-5 job that I'm making money with. And I kind of like working in the restaurant industry and I kind of like doing this other thing. And so to answer your question, my advice would be do it, try it. The worst that happens is you go, that sucks. I don't like it. I'll go do something else. But you're never going to know that until you try it. You're never going to know that answer until you give it a shot. And so why not go give it a shot? You have nothing to lose. You have nothing to lose.
You know, back in the day when I was growing up, it was a different world where if you got a great paying job and if you had that career, you just had it and you retired.
And you were
those
done.
Days, yeah, and that's the thing. Those days are over. The idea of feeling, I don't know, air quotes, secure in something. I think there are some more secure situations than both on you and I live in.
Totally.
But not necessarily. Not that much more.
Yeah. No, listen, I got friends who are doctors and lawyers, and they are very secure. They feel very secure to me. I also have friends who are professional photographers and they do wedding photography and they feel very secure to me. But those are two very different things. One, they went to school for 9 years. One, they fell in love with photography and they knew how to market themselves and that's what they do. I think if you want absolute security, if you want that one job that you're going to have for the next 50 years, that's great. And they're definitely still out there. I think people in the arts feel that a lot less.
Yes.
I think that there is security in insecurity with the arts and with this kind of work, which I personally thrive off of. I enjoy. I don't like being in the office from 9-to-5. It didn't work for me. I like the fact that I have 5 different clients that sometimes I'll get a text at 9 p.m. going, hey, can you edit this video and post it? And sometimes I don't. And sometimes I go skiing for the day and I won't hear anything from any clients and the whole day was fine and it's a Tuesday and I've gone skiing. You know, it depends on the day. It depends on the work. But in the end, I think security is great. You can feel secure in insecurity and you're never going to know unless you try it. So if you're interested in a job, if you're interested in a project, whatever it is, go do it because when else are you going to do it?
Yes. One life. Mommy. One life, one body. She always knows when an hour is up. It's amazing. Hi, Bean. Have you met my Bean yet or is this the first time?
I haven't. This is my first time. Well, I did once on a FaceTime during class.
That's right. Okay. So, Noah, thank you so much for coming today.
Thanks for having me.
Noah, I feel like we've known each other for way longer than we actually have. Yeah, we click. It's kind of cool. And I'm so excited to see this app of yours take off. And thank you so much for the great advice about air quotes pivoting, because we all, I don't even know, I feel like in today's world, like no one gets away with not doing that. Like we all have to shift and go with the times. So thank you so much. And to my listeners, if you would honor me with a 5-star rating and a review, it helps so, so much. Go to the website, grab your free resources, meet me on the mat for Roll It Out. There's always a 14-day free trial. It's only $19 a month, you guys. It's such a good deal. It's just a hard sell because people don't want to really carve out time to take care of themselves. But let's be the minority and actually do that. It makes a huge difference in my life. All right, guys, check out Greener Grass, my podcast with Kelly McVeigh. We are very broad on topics, in contrast to this one. We're with Digitent Podcasts, and I hope you have an amazing week. Over and out. This is Carrie. Wrap your head around the sulks. This is the Expecting Realist.